Homeschooling can feel like the most overwhelming, frustrating, and impossible thing to do. It's been a long winter, man. It's been cold. It's dark. You've been stuck in the house with these kids. And it's just, the work is never ending. Now it's mud. Snow is gone. Now we have mud. It's just a lot. So rather than locking yourself in the bedroom and screaming, and I may have done that, so I would not judge you if you have, let's share some ideas that'll set you up with some effective routines to help you get a handle on everything. Welcome to part two of How to Homeschool and Not Lose Your Mind.
Hello and welcome to the Stay at Home Schooling Mom podcast. This is season two. We're very excited. My name is Ginny Supert. I'm joined by my good friend, Mary Ellen Barrett. Together we have, mortifying to admit this, 50 years of homeschool experience. And we are happy to admit that we still don't know everything about it, but we also are very happy to share our experiences and what we've learned. If you're listening on a podcast app, we encourage you to subscribe and give us a great rating. It helps us get in front of people when they search for Catholic homeschooling. And we think we are helping parents from some of the remarks that we've gotten back. But before we jump in to how to homeschool and not go crazy, lose your mind, we'd like to thank a great friend and a supporter of our podcast, Seton Home Study School. Seton is our primary sponsor here on the podcast. They have been the premier Catholic homeschooling curriculum for over 40 years now. They provide daily lesson plans, grading, counseling services, testing. They're all available with a Seton enrollment. They're entirely Catholic, very, very affordable, especially for you that are already paying private school tuition. You won't believe how affordable it is. So check out their website at www.setonhome.org. And this is part two of our topic, you know, how to homeschool and not lose your mind. If you missed part one, you can certainly just check it out and go listen to that first. But Mary Ellen, do you want to recap what we said last week?
Yes. So we kind of talked about the first few ways of helping your family and everything stay on track. Most important was discipline, prayer, and consulting your husband to make sure that he's on board with all the things, and helping, getting his support as the principal in terms of disciplining the children and picking curriculums and things like that. So did I miss anything? Oh, and we talked a lot about vacuuming.
And getting up early.
Can't
sleep in if you're a homeschool mom. So anyhow, today we're going to give you a few more ideas about what will help you make it through your homeschool day and year. And in my case, decade, actually, in my case, two decades of homeschooling. And I've actually written a book on this topic. You can get it from Seton about home management. Three things have to be done every day. Some of you might be spotless. Others of you will be more like me, not spotless. But you have to get your laundry done. Okay. Yeah. The stacks and stacks of laundry will just drive you nuts. Wash it, dry it, fold it, and put it away.
Even if it's just one load a day. One load a day is fine. You'll keep up at least. Don't let it pile up. It's so defeating.
You're so sorry if you do that. Your laundry has to get done. Your meals. And meals, that's easy to say. We'll get three meals on the table every day. One of the things that you have to do is sort of plan your meals and coordinate it with your grocery shopping.
Right.
And your pantry.
Right. We are both big advocates of the meal planning for your budget and for your sanity. It's the only way.
One of the things that I used to do, because again, I had an immense family, I would buy things like a turkey or a ham, or I'd make a big pot. I'm Italian, so a big pot of what they call Sunday sauce, you know, tomato sauce with meatballs and sausage and stuff. But if you make, say, for the sake of argument, I made the Sunday sauce on Sunday and we had a really nice dinner with meatballs and sausage and some sort of pasta. Well, 2 days later, that became meatball subs. Mm-hmm. And then on Thursday, maybe I put together a pizza. Right. So that one meal stretched out into three meals. And it wasn't that I didn't have to put extra work into it. You obviously have to buy the cheese for the pizza and the dough and all that sort of stuff. But it was in my mind. I know if I have sauce on Sunday, I have another meal on Tuesday, another meal on Thursday. Same thing with the turkey. You have turkey dinner on Sunday. You can have like a turkey casserole on Tuesday, and you can have turkey soup on Thursday. You have, so one meal really becomes three meals. Ham, you have ham on one day, your regular ham with, you know, I don't know, sweet potatoes or something like that. And then you have ham, potato, and cheese casserole a couple of days later. And then a couple of days after that, you have a pea soup made with your ham bone.
Right. Yeah, it's using up everything you have. It's budget friendly. It keeps it in your head so you know what's coming. And keep the meals simple. This is not the state of your life where you start, you know, picking up Julia Child's book and, you know, making duck en croûte or something like that. This is when you get your casseroles, sandwiches, pizzas, tacos, all that kind of stuff that's easy, quick, and kids like it and they'll eat it. And you throw a salad and some vegetables in there with it. So they're getting a little bit more nutrition. Do not go crazy with the meals. It's not the time of your life to really start experimenting and being, you know, chefy. Get the stuff on the table, get everybody fed. So you have to do your laundry every day. You have to do your meals and your menu plan, grocery plan, all that kind of stuff. And then school, you have to do some school every day. And I would always make sure that at the very bare minimum, math, reading, and religion got done. Because if you fall behind in those, it gets tragic really quickly, especially the math.
Yes. But yes. And you know, one of the things that homeschoolers forget all the time, literally all the time, which we did when we were in school, I was in a brick and mortar school, so were you. If your kids are getting behind in math for the sake of argument, they struggle with it a little bit, it's a little tougher for them, you haven't been as disciplined as you'd like to be, there is such a thing as homework. They don't have to watch TV or play video games at night.
Right. Yeah.
They can take half an hour, you know, and finish that math page.
Right. Or they can practice their math facts or something like that. Yeah. I mean, not millions of American children do homework.
Every night.
You know, one of the benefits of homeschooling is that you can say, all right, at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, we're done and we don't do homework. But if they need extra practice a Saturday morning to practice their math facts or to study their catechism or to read a book aloud to you, this is all absolutely doable. Millions of children do it and nobody's died from it yet. So you won't blow up. Nothing's going to happen.
One of the things I did, so anybody who's enrolled in Seton, people talk about book reports as the dreaded book report.
Yeah.
Like nobody wants to do a book report. We used to read the books over the summer.
Right. Yes. I've done that. Or take a vacation and read them. Yeah. That just takes the pressure off a lot in the semester when you're doing a Seton. And there are probably other enrolled ones where they have to do book reports too. But I think, just use your summers wisely.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I would do early in the morning during the summer, we do our chores, whatever those were. And then I used to have them do some sort of schoolwork. Mm-hmm. And that varied from kids. Like kids that were struggling with their multiplication tables, maybe they had to do something like that. Or they all had to read. And if you talk to teachers, brick and mortar teachers, they will tell you kids come back to school in September and it's like they went back to kindergarten every year.
Right. Yeah. They spend the first month or two just reviewing and trying to get them back up to speed. I used to use the Seton math books had them, and I think the Saxon math books had in the back, like those time tests, you know, so yeah. It was just like a whole page, maybe 100 little multiplication or the simple division or stuff like that when they were little. And I would copy them and I would do them in the summer. Sure. You know, we'd make 10 copies of it. And like every other day we do different ones. And then they had to read. They had to read for a half hour, at least a half hour every day when they were younger. As they got older, it got more. It wasn't 15 minutes of math. It really wasn't. It was just something to keep the skills going. And you can do flashcards and play math bingo games and stuff like that to keep it going too, make it a little bit more fun. But you really should use those off times wisely. So homework or extra, call it extra credit, whatever you want to call it, it can be done. And it should be done for a lot of kids.
It should be. Really for almost every kid. There are very few kids that can take 12 weeks off and maintain their skill level. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
So those are the things that you have to do every day. To recap real quickly, laundry, meals, and some sort of schoolwork absolutely every day so you don't fall behind. And one of the ways that you can do all of those is minimize your time out of the house.
Yeah, and we actually have done whole podcasts on this, but it bears repeating. Don't overcommit.
And the thing is, people see your nice Catholic family. It used to happen to me all the time. So my sort of out of home before I started homeschooling, when my kids were still in school, my out of home activity was I was a pro-life speaker.
Right.
And I love doing it. I believed in it. I still believe in it. I think it's a wonderful thing. And I have wonderful pro-life children and grandchildren, I'm sure, as a result of my commitment to that. That's all terrific. However, when pastors see, oh, look, that lady really speaks well, maybe we should have her as a lector. And then they just say, well, they're such a nice couple. They should be the pre-Cana couple. And
yeah,
maybe they can teach, you know, we're going to open up a CCD preschool. Maybe they could, you know, one of them can teach. Here's the issue. All of these things are good things. Yeah. Every one of them. It's not like they're asking, they're not asking you to, you know, do something immoral. They're asking you to do something wonderful, beneficial, builds up the kingdom of God. So you feel guilty saying no.
Right. But you're building the kingdom of God in your house. That's the first priority in your home. So minimizing the time out of the, and it doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to do these things at some point. Like Ginny and I are both in a season where if we want to volunteer or do something now, it's much easier.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have small children, and the priority should be teaching them and teaching them well and getting them reading independently and getting their math facts in and getting them disciplined so they sit down and do their work. And that takes years. It takes years.
And it takes years on task. So
yeah,
you cannot be teaching CCD and you're a lector and you're a cantor and you're a pro-life speaker and you raise money for the unwed mother's home and the this, and you just can't do it. There will be times in your life when you can.
Yeah.
And look forward to those times and maybe send a check if you can afford to, but you can't do everything. And that also extends into homeschooling. So I'm on a lot of homeschooling Facebook pages because that's part of my job, is to sort of talk to parents and counsel them. And usually I'm just pulled my kids out of school. We're going to start homeschooling. And the first question they ask is there a co-op available? Or is there a pod school available? Or for goodness sake, you're homeschooling. That means school in your home. Not right. To say that pod co-ops are bad. They're fine. But every person, think about this for a minute. Let's say something wonderful. One of the priests at a parish not too far away from your house is offering Latin classes. It's nothing you can teach.
Right.
You are not going to be able to teach Latin. And this priest is willing to do it. And he's not even charging people. He's doing it out of the goodness of his heart. And, wow, I really want my high school kids to take Latin. Except here's the thing. You can't leave the other kids home. You can't leave the four-year-old home while you drive the high school kid to take the Latin class. So you have to haul everybody out, which means everybody has to be dressed respectfully, you know, clean enough. You have to be clean enough. Everybody has to go potty first. That could take half an hour all by itself. Because you put the kids in the car and then the last person, we have to go to the bathroom before we go. So everybody has to be up and dressed and fed and pottied and then into the car. And then you have to drive there. And even if it's only a 15-minute drive, that's 15 minutes out of your day. Could have gotten spelling done during that time.
Right.
Then you get there and the two, you know, junior high school kids or something go in, they take their Latin class. What do you do with the other kids? Well, there's a library not too far away. So you drive over to the library. Maybe you read books with the kids there. Then when the class is over, you have to drive back to where the priest is giving the classes. And then, you know, the kids come out and the other five mothers that are there who drop their kids off, you know them really well. So you're going to stop and chat and gab a little bit. You've just blown a whole morning on Latin class.
Right. And by the time you get home, it's lunchtime and then nobody's doing anything.
Right.
Nobody's doing anything.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
You basically blew a whole day.
Yeah.
So a Latin class sounds very attractive. It sounds wonderful. It sounds terrific. But, you know, maybe you have to pass on that. You have to wait until Junior can drive himself.
Right.
And then give him the car while you're home.
Sign him up for an online class or something. Because, everything sounds good. And they are good. And it's valuable.
They
and
are
all
good.
That kind of stuff. But you have to evaluate, is this worth dragging all of these little kids out? Is there a way maybe we can, you know, drop them off or another mom can pick them up? I mean, if you really, really have to.
Some mom that has one kid, let her pick up.
Right. Yeah. And maybe you make her dinner or something once in a while. But minimizing the time out of the house. And co-ops are good. I mean, co-ops are great for getting things done. I used co-ops for dissection classes and things I didn't want. Like I didn't want an eyeball in my house.
Right.
Or like a fetal pig or something like that. But you have to kind of figure out if it's worth the time out of your house. If this is something that really is going on a transcript, it's valuable, they need to have it. How can I manage the other kids? Is this a drop-off thing? Can I carpool with people? Like
you have to really, really think it through.
Yeah. it's not easy. It really is almost never easy, and sometimes completely not worth it academically.
That's what, you know, when my kids were little, I had a support group, and we would do fun things. It wasn't a co-op. It was fun things. Like, we'd all go to a museum. That was lovely.
Yeah.
You can go to a museum by yourself. You'd be shocked to hear. But then they would also do things like, these were usually the moms who had like one kindergarten kid or one third grader and a kindergarten kid. And they would set up a day that we could go to a farm in the fall and take a hayride and pick pumpkins. And here's the thing. It was a lot of fun. The kids enjoyed it. But what am I telling my high school kids? Listen, mommy's going to be off with the little kids picking pumpkins. So I want you to sit there and finish your schoolwork all by yourself. And they're not going to do it.
No, it's a rare kid that will actually do that.
Yeah.
It's a rare kid that will do that.
It's a rare kid. They're not going to do it. And they're not going to do it on a regular basis. So it, after a while, I just had to give that up. So you have to give stuff up. The other stuff you have to give up is stuff around your house.
Oh, there's too much stuff in the house.
You know, I was just talking about, I have a one-room house now. I went from a huge Victorian, an immense Victorian, over 4,000 square feet, to one room. It's a big room, but it's one room. I have to think every time I buy a set of glasses.
Yeah, where am I putting this? Where is it
going to go? Where am I going to put this? I have no room for anything. It's incredibly freeing.
Yeah. When you get stuff, now we're recording this in Lent. I think it's going to be posted, but it'd still be Lent. There are like 40 bags and 40 days challenges.
Right.
You know, that I've done in my, before. I'm not doing it right now, but it's very freeing to see this stuff go.
That you don't need, like, you're not using it.
You don't need it. Like, I had a whole stack of curtains in one of my closets, taking up a huge amount of room. Like, you buy a new set of curtains. These look kind of shabby. I don't like them anymore. I painted the room, whatever. Fold them up and throw them in a closet. Why? Why do I have these? These
they're not going to the baby thrift curtains store. In there, right?
No, like, somebody else might want these curtains. So I just drop it all off at the thrift store. And like, suddenly the closet is half empty. Yeah. Ah, it's a beautiful feeling. It's just a beautiful feeling.
Just, and people buy so many gadgets now.
Oh gosh. If you're buying stuff to organize your stuff, just get rid of stuff.
Right.
Just get rid of your stuff. You don't need more bins. You need to get rid of stuff.
Well, that, and like, for example, I use a, well, I guess you call it a slow cooker. I use it all the time. Okay. But people have a crock pot. They have a rice cooker. They have an air fryer. They have a toaster. They have a toaster oven. They have an oven. You don't need all, you can cook rice, you'd be shocked to hear, in a saucepan on the top of your stove.
Right. Yeah. You need a saucepan with a lid. That's it. Okay. And even the air fryer, I have a convection portion of my oven and that's an air fryer. Really, a convection oven is an air fryer. So, and my kids just want an air fryer in the worst way. And I don't want to give up the counter space. And I have a lot of counter space. I don't want this thing. I don't want it. It's it there. First of all, you can't cook for my family. I've, you know, a million people here in an air fryer.
An air fryer, right. You need the convection oven.
I do. And so I'm not getting an air fryer. And they're all in, I know it's going to land on my birthday or something. I'm going to get an air fryer and I'm going to have to be happy about it. But I just, I don't want stuff on my counter. I have a crock pot. I have pots and pans. I have an oven. That's really what I need.
Well, the other thing that happens is if you have all of these various little, oh, and then let's talk about blenders. Do people have blenders and they have a Cuisinart? And so you have all these devices all over your, even if you have the counter space, which I don't, it gets dusty. It gets greasy. You have to wash it down. You don't have to do any of that if you don't have it.
Right. Yeah. Just
so simplify your life. Absolutely.
Even going through your kitchen drawers. Like, why do I have six spatulas? I don't need six spatulas.
Right. One spatula does the job.
One, maybe two, you know, maybe you're cooking two things at once, but you don't need six. So, and it's just taking up space. And then it's hard to close the drawer and now you're frustrated. And it's.
And you know, the thing is to remember, years ago, I learned this lesson. We had no money years ago. When I say no money, I mean no money. And somebody had given us a cast off jacket that my son wore. It was the ugliest thing. It was green and it had like an orange stripe on it. It was hideous. So but it kept him warm. So he wore it until. So I don't know if I bought another coat or somebody gave us one. I don't remember now. It's so many years ago. But my son had a new one. So I put that in. We used to have, in those days in our parish, we had like a clothing bin that people could go to. And I put it in the clothing bin. And I remember going to church on Christmas and seeing that ugly. And there couldn't have been two of them in the whole world. And I saw this jacket on a little kid at Christmas Eve Mass. And I thought, that's all this woman has. So there are people, if you have like, if you're hanging the bridesmaid's dresses, you're never going to wear the blessed thing again. And you know what? There are some girls that maybe can't afford to go to prom.
Right.
Because they can't afford a gown.
So you really can bless people by eliminating the clutter, and you're blessing yourself because you're just giving yourself space to breathe in your house, and you're making your cleaning life much, much easier. Cleaning takes no time. Picking up all this stuff and putting it away or finding places for, that's what takes the time. Like if you see, if you hire a cleaning lady, she'll zoom through your house in a couple of hours, but picking up the stuff before she comes takes longer than when she's here. It's ridiculous.
So
cleaning is quick.
Of things.
Yeah. Get rid of everything.
Keep what you need to make your life, you know, successful. Like I have a lot of pots and pans. I do a lot of cooking.
Right.
And that's okay. But I don't have all the gadgets on it. You can cook almost everything that you can cook in one of those gadgets. You can also just cook.
In a pot. Yeah. In a pan, whatever. And this makes being at home, because we're talking about minimizing your time outside of the house. You'll want to be home more if your home is pleasing to you. And you don't feel stifled by all the stuff or overwhelmed by a mess all the time. So just getting rid of things. The kids have toys they don't play with. Bless somebody else with them. You have clothes you don't wear anymore. Bless somebody else with them. You know, go through your kitchen drawers. I don't use all this stuff. Get rid of it. It really is freeing. It makes you feel so much better.
And then we should talk a little bit about the kids themselves. Because obviously a cooperative kid is like the key to homeschooling and not going nuts.
Right.
So we really want to pray with our kids. That's so important. Start your day with prayer. You want to instill discipline in them. You want self-discipline. First, it's your discipline. First, it's, you know, we start our schoolwork at 8 o'clock in the morning, but then it's them saying, oh, it's almost 8 o'clock. I have to start my schoolwork. That's when you've succeeded.
Right. When you see them pulling out their books and going to, you know, the dining room table or wherever you homeschool around that time. You know, you've gotten something done right there. You're successful because he knows that he has to start doing his math or whatever at 8 o'clock right after prayer. So he's ready. Yeah. So you've instilled that.
So, you know, step one is you have to tell them what to do and make them cooperative. Step two is they do it without you telling them. And that's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
We also, and this is where I think we're definitely failing today, give our children meaningful work.
Right. Work around the house, work or having them get jobs, yard work, housework, helping people work, volunteer work. Kids have to work. They do. And they don't much anymore.
No, they don't work anymore. And as a result, we used to own a business. And I can tell you that whenever we would get together with other small business owners, the biggest crab that people carry on about is I cannot get staff.
Right. And
people
it's because,
work.
Yeah,
when I say don't want to work, I don't mean that they don't have the skills to work. I mean, they don't show up.
Right.
Or if they do show up, they don't show up on time.
There was just an article in the newspaper here in New York a couple of days ago about that kids are unable to function. They were talking about, I think it's Gen X, after millennials, like the 20-year-olds,
I guess. Millennials and then Gen X.
Gen X kids are incapable of living adult lives because they've been coddled by their parents for so long. Like they never had to solve a problem. These were the moms who would sweep in and bring them their lunch if they forgot it, or make sure that they packed their sports bags so they didn't have to.
Speak to the teacher if they got a bad grade and say, son worked so hard on this. You know,
all of that stuff. And now these kids and would call their college professors. Like there were so many little stories and anecdotes in this article. And now these kids, they can't function on their own. They can't cook
a meal. They're still living home at 30 years old.
Yeah, they can't.
Mom and dad are still paying their cell phone bills.
They can't do anything. And they're unhirable for that reason. And it's the saddest thing in the world. I mean, these are the people who are supposed to be like, when you and I are like elderly and sick, they're supposed to be the ones who are going to step up and be doctors and lawyers and all that kind of stuff, all that we need. But they're not. We're missing a generation
here. Our expectations have been so low for children. We should do a podcast about this. But if you're sitting home listening to this, I want you to think about something. My dad was a Depression era kid, and he got a job when he was 12 years old. Now, he was a big, tall guy, so they might not have known he was 12. He was what's called a pin boy at a bowling alley. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been bowling and they have the automatic pin setters, well, they didn't have that when my dad was younger. So people would throw a 16-pound ball down this alley. and he had to jump out of the way, and then he had to jump down again, send the ball back, and set the pins up. Imagine allowing like a 12-year-old kid to do that now.
Oh my gosh, no. No, that would just would not happen.
He went, then during the war, he was too young to go to World War II, but there were no men, so he was driving a milk truck around the Bronx.
Yeah.
See, he didn't have a license yet, but nobody wanted to look too closely because they really needed workers to do this.
Wartime,
so
yeah.
He just let this 14-year-old drive a milk truck around the Bronx and deliver milk before he went to high school.
Kids are very capable.
And incredibly capable.
And I don't think people tap into that enough anymore. My 15-year-old is gifted with construction and building things and stuff like that. Right. So we have a shed in the backyard and he's outfitted it and he has his father's tools and some of his grandfather's tools and he builds things for me. I call it shop class. And he tinkers with cars. He's building a motorbike. He does all of that kind of stuff. And so he wants to go to automotive repair school. He wants to be a mechanic.
He'll make a lot of money.
Yeah. It's a great job. He can support a family with it. We're totally behind that. But he works. Like he does things for odd jobs around the neighborhood. He mows people's lawns. He takes care of their pets when they're gone. He just went out and sought work. He's that kind of a kid.
Yeah.
You can actually.
Every kid did that.
Yeah. You know, there was a time when everybody
younger,
did that.
And I'm dating myself here, but if you went to a grocery store after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, every cash register was staffed by a teenager. Every shelf was being stocked by a teenager. Now, I was one of those teenagers that did that. I could still work at that store because now it's all old people.
Right. And what's sad too, Ginny, is that I have the two 17-year-olds. They cannot get jobs. Nobody will hire them.
Nobody wants them because they're not going to show up. They're going to be on their phones. Your kids might not, but that's the expectation of a 17-year-old.
Right. Yeah. We've created this kind of, society where children aren't expected to work. And children can work. And if you give them meaningful work and you show them how to do it and you show them the importance of it, then they will end up being workers. And this is so important. It's so important because you don't want an undisciplined, lazy, layabout 35-year-old who you're going to have to be constantly supporting.
So that lazy 35-year-old has no confidence in his own abilities because they've never been tested. So this is so important. First of all, I always say teenagers need jobs anyhow.
Yeah.
The old saying, idle hands are the devil's workshop.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
Yeah.
You don't want them laying around playing video games all day. Get them meaningful work. And if that means chopping wood in your backyard because there's no fast food jobs available, then chop wood in the backyard and go walk around the neighborhood and ask people what they need done. Yeah. It's good for them.
By the way, owned her own business with her own building before she was 30 years old. Mm-hmm. But when she was a teenager, she was a dancer and she worked at the academy where she danced. She paid for her own dance lessons and it was very expensive because she was a senior level. And then she used to babysit. And what she would do if a Friday night she had nothing going on, she would text the people she babysat for and say, just to let you know, I'm available on Friday nights. You know, if anybody wants to go out. She never did that once without getting a job.
Right. Yeah.
I can understand that because you and Dave are sitting home. You weren't planning on going out Friday night. But this babysitter who you really like, who's done a great job for you in the past, texts you and says she's available. You might say, well, why don't we go get a glass of wine?
Right. Yeah. Let's go to a movie. I would have at that time of my life. I would have been out the door.
So she never did it one time, not one single time when she didn't get a job.
That's smart. It's initiative. It's having initiative.
And as I say, she's the one that owned her own business by the time she was 30 and owned the building that the business was operated in.
Yeah, and that is doable. I mean, people say, oh, they can't do anything. Everything's so expensive. Well, if they start working and saving early in life, you can do a lot.
And it teaches
you the value of the money. It teaches you how to budget. It teaches you a million things. So we've talked about this so many times,
and
we'll talk about it again.
With their homeschooling.
Yes.
I have to be at work at 2:30 this afternoon, so I've got to get this paper done, period.
Yeah. I think I was a better college student because I worked and paid for it. So I was working full time and going to school full time. And I think I was better than if I just had nothing else to do because I had to get things done. Like I just had to do it. I had a finite amount of time. So that being said, we should check in with our sponsors, right?
Yeah. Seton Hump Study School is our primary sponsor, but we have other sponsors that we are very, very grateful to. They keep us alive. So we're just going to take a minute to listen to a short break.
And now we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Benedictine College.
Benedictine College is a Newman Guide school located in Atchison, Kansas. It is heir to the 1,500 years of Benedictine dedication to learning. Benedictine College mission as a Catholic Benedictine liberal arts residential college is the education of men and women within a community of faith and scholarship. There are over 50 undergraduate programs, 2 master's degree programs, and they are located on a beautiful, beautiful campus. Please check out their website at benedictine.edu for more information about student life, faith life, admissions, financial aid, athletics, and a variety of other things. You can even schedule a visit to the campus on the website. So again, check them out at benedictine.edu. And thank you, Benedictine College, for sponsoring the Stay at Home Schooling Mom podcast.
And welcome back. We are talking about how to homeschool and not lose your mind. This is part 2 of the podcast. We split it up. We could have made 6, but we decided to do 2 for you guys. If you want to catch up with the first half, it should be the podcast directly below this one, wherever you're listening. So while you're there, you can like and subscribe to us. We really appreciate that. And we are grateful that you are here. So we talked about praying with children, disciplining children. What else? It was only a minute
ago. Getting rid of clutter.
Getting rid of clutter.
At least the basics of your household, which we said laundry, meals, and just a basic school.
Right. Every day.
Basic school work done absolutely every day are 3 keys to keep yourself from going too insane. Another thing, though, that kind of got lost. So if any of you have ever read books, oh, I don't know, Laura Ingalls Wilder series would be one of them. Mm. Thread That Runs So True by Jesse Stewart. These are all books about old schooling 100 years ago, 150 years ago even. And they talk about recess.
Right.
Kids always, always, always had recess.
I did, going to school.
I did as well. Yeah. I did as well. And it was a recognition of the fact, and by the way, these were kids that usually walked to school after they did a lot of heavy chores around their homes. But schools recognize that you can only leave, especially a little boy, but girls too, sitting at a desk for so many hours before the kid tunes out and he's not learning anything anyhow. Mm-hmm. They need the break, and outside is better than inside.
Outside is always better, at least 15 minutes, but as much time as you can get them outside before, during, and after school. Dress them for the weather. You'll be the coolest mom in the world if you let them go splash around in puddles, things like that. Get them outside, vitamin D, fresh air. It builds skills, and they're not staring at a screen. They're not
so staring. Important. Yeah. You know, there was now I'm going back maybe about 12 years ago. Public schools in the United States adopted the Common Core state standards, which have turned out to be a disaster. As we know, education's only gone downhill. But they were so overwhelmed. They took so much time out of the teachers' days that schools that had recess eliminated it.
Yeah.
Schools eliminated. They just didn't have the time anymore to allow these kids to do this, to meet these Common Core state standards. But there was a district in Texas that was so interesting. They did just the opposite. They took their 15-minute recess and stretched it out to 30. Now, this was a grammar school, so probably went up to 5th grade. So every kid got half an hour in the morning and half an hour in the afternoon of outside exercise.
Did they do better on tests?
They did better on tests. The students had better concentration. There were fewer parents looking to get an ADHD diagnosis for their kids. The fact is, this is the way we expect children to live now is really not normal or healthy,
right?
With the human condition. It just is not. For millennia, human beings had to work and work very, very hard physically.
Right. Yeah, it's not developmentally appropriate to expect an 8-year-old to sit inside for 6, 7, 8 hours. And just sit, or maybe just walk around the classroom, go get a pencil or something like that. They're mostly sitting. It's just not, it's not
they have
good
to
for
be
them.
Outside. And if you think back to our own country until maybe 70 years ago or so, people lived in an agrarian society. A little boy would get up and he'd have to go muck out the stable. He'd have to go get wood for the fire, for the wood stove. He'd have to get the eggs from the chickens. He'd have to haul water from the well. And then he got dressed and he went to school where he had to walk 2 miles to get there.
Yeah.
Then he was delighted to lay down, to sit down and work a little bit. But that's not the case now. Our kids don't make their own beds anymore. So they really need to, first of all, exercise. And unless it's 20 below, they have to be outside.
Yeah, they need the fresh air. I went to school in the 70s. We had recess. We had morning recess and afternoon recess in grammar school. And then when you got home, you did your homework right away and your mother kicked you out of the house. And on Saturday, she kicked you. You had breakfast, she kicked you. She didn't want you in her house.
One of the issues is if you look at this, and I've given this a lot of thought because my own children now are buying homes. And they're immense compared to the houses that I grew up in or even my first house. So I grew up until I was 10. And then I slept with my brothers. My mother said, well, she's getting a little old for that. So they bought another house. But we were in a two-bedroom ranch. These houses were tiny. Nobody had a playroom.
Yeah.
Nobody had a TV room. Nobody had, and you had a living room, dining room, kitchen, and bedrooms. One bathroom, maybe.
Yeah.
We had one bathroom until I was 10.
I grew up in a cape, a three-bedroom cape, one bathroom. Yeah. Tiny, tiny rooms, small house.
Tiny, little house.
Yeah.
And in those days, of course, families were immense. So not only were the houses small, but it was common. There were five in my family. Loads of kids on my block had 7, 8, 9 kids. It was really, really common in a Catholic neighborhood in New York when I grew up. So we got home from school. No mother wanted 9 kids in that teeny weeny little house. Hang up your uniform put your play clothes on and get out of the house. Come back when the streetlights are on.
Right. Yeah. Same thing. We knew there was a fire. The fire bell would go off at 5 o'clock and that's when you could come home.
With us, it was the streetlights.
Yeah. So nobody's mother wanted them in the house. And Saturdays, you were never in the house.
In our day, kids did get more chores.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to be in my mother's line of vision either.
No. And there was nothing to do at home either. Like there were no cartoons. You had Saturday morning and maybe 2 or 3 shows at like 4 o'clock for kids. And that was it.
Yeah, TV was horrible.
TV was never on. It was on.
The TV wasn't on. There were also, and I will say this is a big difference where I feel sorry for my grandchildren. I grew up, as I say, very blue collar neighborhood, 2 and 3 bedroom houses, tiny little lots. Our clothesline used to be attached to the house next door. That's how close together these, nobody had yards or anything like that. Nobody had swing sets for the most part. We did, but we had a really small yard. So consequently, kids went outside, they walked to the schoolyard to play on the swings there. We played jump rope in the street. Any kid who grew up in New York knows the word car because that means a car was coming. We all had to get out of the street. There were 40 or 50 kids on the street at any given time.
Yeah.
All the time.
It's so funny because we had so little, but I have just lovely memories of that childhood. Right, being outside and playing with the kids, it's the same thing. Like there were tons of kids in the neighborhood. You could always find somebody wandering around or on their bike or something like that.
Somebody's playing stickball. You could always get a pickup game. Somebody's doing jump rope.
We're getting very nostalgic here.
We are here. But what we do want to say, and the kids from that generation were healthy and happy and well-adjusted. Get your kids outside.
Yeah, get them outside
every day
as much as you can. At least
15
minutes.
They come in, they say
they're
cold, give them another set of gloves, send them out again.
Right, yeah. It is healthy for them.
But we do, in a homeschooling podcast, we really should talk a little bit about homeschooling.
Right.
We like to go off on our tangents. Here's the thing. When I started homeschooling in 1989, there were 3 Catholic programs, Our Lady of the Rosary, Our Lady of Victory, and Seton. I picked Seton not on some, there was no internet you could look at, because I knew a really nice family that used them. And their kids were turning out great. That's the reason I picked Seton. The one book I had read at the time convinced me that really the superior form of home education was designing your own curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to use Seton for a year or so, let them teach me how to teach, and then I was going to move on to do the better thing, which was design my own curriculum. As it turned out, I never left Seton. Could something in another program have done better in some subject or just a part of a subject or a topic? Maybe, sure.
Sure. Yeah. I would say, yeah, absolutely.
Sure. But you could drive yourself nuts with that.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Talk about driving yourself nuts.
I call them curriculum magpies, these moms, and they hear about the new thing and they want to try it, or they go online, they go to Facebook or something and say, this math isn't working for me. What should I do? And then they get 50 people telling them the 50 different maths that are out there now. And then they buy that and they spend a lot of money. And 2 or 3 years later, the kid can't do math because they've switched so many times that there's been no consistency in the teaching. So
mom doesn't know how to use it either. That's right. The other thing. Seton sends very detailed lesson plans. They're very easy to use. But by the time I was in for 10 years, I didn't have to look at the lesson plans every day.
Right. Yeah, you know what to expect. You know what's coming. You know how to do it. And that's the advantage. It makes your life so much easier. So whether it's a Seton or a Mother of Divine Grace or, you know, whatever it is, whatever you pick, stick with it. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to suit you at every corner. Nothing will. That's the thing. Nothing is perfect. What you're going to have to do is learn how to adapt your curriculum to your child, to your household, to your, you know, rhythm of work. And you will figure that out if you just stick with it, you know, and if you need to adjust here and there, like this math is really not, this kid is not getting it in this math. So maybe you try another math curriculum, but you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Power through for a while first, because it might just be that he struggles in math. And no matter what you give him, he's going to struggle in math. So that's when you pull out maybe the extra times tables, or you get a tutor or something. Yeah, the Kumon book, or there's a YouTube video. That's what you do. You don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
I remember when I did conferences years ago, I had a lady come up to me and she said, "I just love your Seton phonics. It's fantastic." She says, first of all, I bought this phonics program first and I used it. My daughter just didn't get it. And then I got the second phonics program and I used it. And it just didn't catch on. And then I got the Seton program and she just reads beautifully now. And I said, "Well, I'm glad you like Seton." I said, "But you probably could have reversed the order and gotten the same result. You've taught the kid phonics now 3 times.
Right.
And it finally clicked in her brain. And this is, so again, by all means enrich. Like Seton now has done a better job in science. Their science years ago was not terribly good. I did a lot of museums.
Right.
Yeah. We went to nature museums. We went to science museums. We went to arboretums. That was how I was able to enrich it and sort of pique their interest. And I would still suggest that if you can't get a music program that you like, you can go online now and listen to the Chicago Symphony Orchestra or the Metropolitan Opera.
Right. There's a lot available online that you can do. You can go to YouTube University there and hear all of the different instruments.
You don't have to get online and say, "What program offers better music?"
Yeah. Yeah. That's just making you crazy. It's don't follow the trends. Like there's always something new and cool
and shiny and glittery.
And that's all wonderful. Like people are starting business. It's really become an industry. When you and I started, it was not an industry. Now it's an industry. And that's fine. That's really a blessing that people have choices. But you can't make yourself crazy. You can't look at the new shiny thing every year or every 6 months and invest your time and your energy and a lot of money in buying a whole bunch of stuff when now you're starting all over again. It's like you're new out of the gate again, where you've been with this program, whatever it is, for 2 years, just stick with it and adjust.
You might think, "Well, it's not that good in this area." That's okay.
Yeah.
Then you know that you've identified a problem with the program you're using and you can say, "Well, I can enrich it. However, maybe you don't like the reading they give you. Your town has a library, go to your town library and get some better books."
You're in charge of the homeschool. So if you're working with a program, and I've done this with Seton, sometimes I don't love the reading that they give us. So I just replace it with something else. I'm in charge here. The Seton police
and
don't
Seton
show up.
Say that.
And
Mary Ellen
and
we talk to our bosses all the time. And they would say that the thing that they value the most is parental choice.
Right.
That we exist to help parents to do their job, which is to educate their own kids.
And I would imagine most of the other curriculum companies have the same philosophy.
Well, I know Laura Berquist. I've met Laura Berquist and I know
I've never spoken to her about that, but I would, knowing her the little bit that I do, I would imagine she would say the same thing. "Oh, you don't like this book, pick another book. You don't like this, whatever, pick another one." Right. You have to just learn how to take what's good and then enhance what's not good for your family. And keeping in mind that nothing is going to be perfect for every kid and every family. It's just not. So but if you stick with the one thing that you choose for several years, you will become much more comfortable with it and you will learn how to teach it. And it will be a breeze compared to starting over again every 6 months. That is stressful and expensive. So don't do that. Right now, I'm telling you, don't do that.
Don't do it. We can say absolute experience, because there's not a homeschool mom I know that doesn't have some book on her shelf that she bought, paid too much money for, and never really opened it up.
More than one. There have been more than one of those books in my house.
And then the final thing, you've been great guests listening to us gab on.
Yeah.
The final thing that we should talk about, you know, you can't really teach your kids at home. You can't manage your household. There's a lot of stuff you can't do if you don't have something with that man that you married.
I know. You really have to just treasure your marriage. That has to come first. You know, I think the priority is God, your marriage, and then your children and home, homeschool. It's so important to spend that time. And it is so hard to find that time when you're overwhelmed with a bunch of little kids and he's overwhelmed with working. And maybe you also have a job and maybe he has two jobs. For a long time, my husband had two jobs. I know
Jenny had two jobs too.
Yeah, he worked two jobs. It's really hard, but you have to find that time. Even if it's a home date, we used to put the kids, we would do all the driving around like maniacs on Saturdays. And it ended somewhere around 2 o'clock on Saturdays. So we would put the kids in front of a movie and or outside and lock the door, send them outside. And we would make each other a cocktail, like we'd have one martini or a glass of wine or something. And I would have like a special little appetizer tucked away, hidden from the children because you have to hide food. And we would just have that little like home date for an hour on Saturday afternoon and sit and talk to each other. And because that's all we could do at that time. We didn't have money to go out.
That was okay.
Yeah.
We had a thing. So my husband started a new job when he was, I guess, in his mid-30s. I'm trying to think now. And we had a lot of little kids. I mean, literally, I had 6 kids in 7 years. We had a lot of little kids. And they were still little then when he started this job. But he wanted to be able to talk about it. It was important to him to be able to talk about what he had done that day. So what we would do is we would go up into our bedroom. He would sit at his desk. I would sit on the bed. Sometimes I was nursing a baby and no kids were allowed. They just knew, leave daddy alone when he first gets home from work for 15 or 20 minutes. He tells me about his day. He doesn't do that anymore. But at that point in his life, it was really important for him to be able to unload on me and tell me, you know, what he was doing.
Yeah. That's nice, though, that he wanted to do that with you. He wanted to spend that little time with you and kind of share his life, because his life was mostly outside of the house.
But in our case, it definitely was. Yeah. Like Dave, Ed worked two jobs, much of our married life. It was a big family to keep afloat. And by the way, poor old Ed's in his 70s and he's still working. But 12 kids, it turns out, is not a retirement plan.
Yeah. No, neither was eight. But the fact that he wanted to share that part of his life with you, I think is very touching. And it speaks to the kind of marriage that you have. And that's what we all want, is that we want to always stay connected. We want.
Yeah. And it could be 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah. And that's all it takes. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to have like this huge romantic excursion to stay connected with your husband. You can walk around the block holding hands.
Right.
One time around the block, if you have kids old enough to leave, or just a few minutes, like when Ed got home, or our Saturday afternoon dates, or anything like that, that's important to you, go out for coffee on Saturday mornings or something like that. Just protect your marriage. You want to feel that feeling like when you were dating and you got a little giddy at the idea that you were going out that night and you were going to see him or something like that. You want to encourage that feeling in you every day, and you want him to feel that way too.
The other thing, let me just throw this one out there, because Ed and I were actually talking about this not too long ago. We've been married over 50 years. We've been married a long, long time. To this day, when I give him dinner, he says, "Thank you, honey. That was delicious."
That's so sweet. Yeah. It's we courteous,
both do
but
that.
It's lovely.
That sort of general, some people think, oh, well, you know, he knows I love him. Say it anyhow.
Yeah, say it anyway. And please and thank you and all those little courtesies that in the daily grind you can kind of let fall away. Make sure you practice them on your husband all the time.
Can I get something for you, honey?
Yeah. Service.
Silly things like that. Doesn't cost you anything.
No.
But the other thing, you know, when I was raising all those million kids, I always used to say, the day is going to come when the last one's going to say, love you, Mom. See you Sunday.
Yeah.
And it came. Even with 12 kids, it came. The day came when the last one moved out of the house. You have to have something left.
Yes. You have to enjoy each other's company. You have to have, it's so important. You know, I saw this little video. This woman on Instagram took, and I used to do this. And I have, well, he doesn't leave much anymore, Dave. He works from home a lot. But she filmed it over the course of a couple of months, and she had tiny children, like a baby and a toddler. And she would just run to the door when her husband got home and greet him at the door. and give him a kiss. And then the kids, well, daddy's home. Right. It was very cute. And it got to be like the first time she did it, he's like, oh, all right, that's nice. It got to be, he said, the best part of his day. He looked forward every day to coming home and seeing his little family there and getting this big greeting. And that cost nothing. It's so simple, and it just made him feel so loved. And I think that would make anybody feel loved to have them just, and I used to greet my husband at the door as best I could, as many days as I could, or I'd send the kids, daddy's home. Yay, daddy's home. You know, they get all crazy. It's adorable. And so it's just such a tiny little thing, but it's so expressive of love. And things like that you can do for your husband will enhance your marriage and make your whole life better. Just your whole life gets better when your marriage is
including
in
your
the
home
place.
School.
Yes, especially your homeschool, because you can't do this without that. Those sacramental graces are so important. So I think that's it. Have we done everything?
Thank you so much for listening to us. Thank you again to our primary sponsor, Seton Home Study School. We could not do this alone. Mary Ellen and I are good for gabbing. That's about what we're good for. Other than that, we have to thank our producer, Jason Lowry, our show notes coordinator, Jim Shanley, and our social media coordinator, Beth Egan. And we thank you so much. Please remember to like and share us and subscribe wherever you get podcasts.
God bless
you and your families.